Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, good morning, everybody. 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show, and I have a couple of, well, one old friend and one new friend in, and that's not a reflection on their age, but how long I've known them in the house, is Sean Christensen from the St. George Area Chamber of Commerce, the CEO. That sounds really, really kind of big and exciting, CEO.
Sounds important, right?
It does, yeah.
We'll go with that. As long as it sounds important, that's what's important.
Yeah. And Brad Stuckey is here as well from State Bank of Utah.
Bank of Utah.
Oh, just Bank of Utah.
Bank of Utah.
Bank of Utah. Yes. Okay. There's a lot of banks out there. I get them confused.
There are.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So, and Brad, thanks for coming, though, today.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you being here.
Glad to be here.
We are going to talk kind of current events a little bit, what's happening. I know yesterday, Sean, you were over at what we thought was going to be exit 11, but is it exit 12 for ribbon cutting?
That's right. Main Street there in Washington City. It was fantastic.
Tell us about it a little bit.
Well, I didn't realize that it had been open for several weeks. I think
it
a few
has,
weeks
yeah.
or so.
Yeah.
But the city set up a really nice situation where, like on an empty lot there, UDOT came and spoke to us, and then Mayor Staley spoke with us, and then Senator Ipsen also spoke, and then we had a ribbon cutting. It was fantastic. It's great to have another exit there in Washington City. That's where I live, actually.
Like I said, they had told us exit 11 for a long time, and of course it's Main Street exit in Washington City, and then they kind of pulled the switcheroo and put signs up that exit 12, and we're all like, I guess it's going to be 12, but I got to drive on it for the first time a week ago Monday, so it's been 9 days, so I know it's been open at least a couple of weeks, but pretty cool.
Yeah, and Main Street, they've done some neat things where they've stamped cobblestone into the street, and that subconsciously helps people slow down. So as they go over that cobblestone and they
really?
Hear that, they slow down, and it helps make it a safe street. I mean, think about the residents who've lived on that street for a long time, and it hasn't been that busy because it,
it wasn't an exit. Main Street. Yeah.
Right. So the city went all out to try to make it as safe and that people drive the speed limit and keep it as nice as possible. They've done extra work to make sure that there's drainage in the middle of Main Street. If you drive down it, you'll notice the trees are down.
How long have you been in town, Sean? How long have you lived down here?
5 years.
5 years, yeah. Main Street in Washington City was notorious for major flooding all the time. Brad knows this because he's been here a long time. But when they did that project to put that kind of the culverts or whatever in the middle, it was a huge relief on a lot of people. And then they had to tell them, oh, by the way, part of the reason we're doing this is because we're going to put an exit here. And then they weren't happy again.
And then they said it's going to be exit 11, and they made it exit 12. I mean, the story continues. It's good.
But I guess the goal behind it is to, that exit 10, Green Spring exit has been, I mean, anybody that drives it knows that is a nightmare. And one of the reasons for now exit 12 is to try to alleviate some of that traffic, I guess, right?
Yeah. And funny enough, that most likely will end up being my exit, right, when I'm coming from down south or up north. Main Street would be the easiest exit, closest to get me to my home. So I'm excited about it. I think it's fantastic. I mean, you think of all the growth that's happened in Washington City. They're almost up to 40,000 residents now. Yeah. So it's incredible all the growth that's happened there. And by the way, Mayor Staley would be so proud of you calling it Green Spring. Not Green Springs,
no S.
He says that every day. He said it yesterday in his speech. So
I actually talked to my dad, because my dad's a geologist, 89 years old, smart as can be still, sharp as a whip. But or is that sharp as a knife? I don't know. Anyway, he's sharp. But he said there actually are more than one springs up there.
So it should have an S.
He said there was one specific one called Green Spring, but there are several springs up there. He said, so technically both are right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we should get him and Mayor Staley in the same room and let him debate it out.
Yeah, I think the original name was Green Spring.
Yeah.
But it's funny, if you drive up Green Spring Drive, you'll see the cross. You know how they put the signs on the cross, you know, the signs, and it'll say some of them have an S and some of them don't. So even they don't know. Even the street makers weren't sure.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
well, I learned something new.
And the freeway off ramp, you know, I don't know if you remember, coming to town, you'd come into town and say Green Springs on one, and then the next one would say Green Spring, and you're like, wait a minute, which one is it? So, but I feel confident saying it's Green Spring Drive.
Yep. Yep.
But I don't live on that street, so.
No, neither do
I. What do I know?
Neither
do I. So, well, that's cool. That's open. Like I said, I got to drive on it very first time a week and a half ago. It's a pretty fast merge, but other than that, I didn't get off that exit, but I got on that exit. It's a pretty quick merge, but not unpleasant and not undoable.
No, and the thing I was most impressed by is the architecture they put in there to make it feel like Southern Utah.
Yeah.
UDOT went above and beyond on that.
And that was important to the city. The city said, look, we need you to understand that you're forcing it. We have to, and Mayor Say will tell you this, we didn't have a choice. UDOT said, we're putting an exit here. They said, well, okay, if you're telling us we have to do this and we want certain things, sound walls, and we want coloring and things like the cobblestone and stuff like that, it's important to them.
So, yeah, turned out beautiful.
Yeah.
As beautiful as a freeway overpass can be, it is.
A lot of people were complaining that the sound walls were blocking their views, though. And I know that was a little bit of an issue. I saw it on some of the Facebook, you know, Southern Utah sites and stuff, saying, hey, now I can't see the, you know, Pine Mountain or whatever. And it's like, well, okay, Mayor Staley explained this. He said they only polled the people that it would directly affect, the people that live right there. And 70% of them said, we want sound walls.
Yeah.
So you may complain because you live a few blocks away, but and you didn't get a say, but you didn't deserve a say. The ones that live there did.
So they went by popular vote.
Pretty much, yeah.
They didn't have an electoral college for that.
No electoral. It was all popular vote.
Yeah. Did you see that Jordan Hess was up yesterday signing for the electoral college, casting his vote?
I was a little confused. Why now? Like, didn't we already do that? Maybe I'm dumb, but I thought we already did that.
Well, it's all part of the process. But yesterday was the actual day
it was official.
The electoral vote went in for the state of Utah. And, yeah, all six of our electoral votes went to President Trump, our former President Trump, up-and-coming President Trump, and
you know, in
Jordan Hess, right, from your Southern Utah.
33 days, you won't have to say former President
Trump.
That's true. You can just say President Trump.
That's right.
And that, you know, the fact that we've had four, and we'll bring Brad in on this, four difficult years financially has affected even Southern Utah. We feel like sometimes we're in a bubble, Brad, because we are Southern Utah, but having the administration we've had has had an effect even on us.
It has. We truly are in a little bit of a bubble, but there are a lot of national things that still do affect us. Inflation being one, higher interest rates being another. Of course, they're both hand in hand, but we're looking forward to more clarity going forward and the economy continuing to grow. The economy has been comparatively with the rest of the nation pretty strong because of our nature of our economy being a little bit in a bubble and how desirable it is to live here. We still have a lot of people that want to move here, which tends to keep our economy stronger than most other places.
I was going to ask you, as a banker, tell me about the interest rate thing. It is so weird. So the Fed comes down, and actually they're going to issue a statement today or tomorrow, I think, on it. But, and they lower the rate, and then you look, you go ask your local banker or loan officer and say, okay, that means my home loan rate went down, right? And, well, the answer is actually no, they went up.
That's correct.
How did that happen?
Yes, it all goes to supply and demand of the money available to be put into the marketplace. And a lot of the interest rates also reflect what they feel like the economy is going to be not only now, but let's say possibly 6 months in the future. And so the interest rate environment, candidly, is probably two steps ahead of what the Fed is doing, just because they've kind of baked in what their anticipation is. Right now, there's a little bit of uncertainty regarding what direction the economy will take because of, depending on where you get your news, whether the economy is going to be great or whether it's going to be tragic.
Isn't that funny that you have to say that, depending on where you get your news? That is so true in today's world.
Yeah. It is true, and it's going to be somewhere in between. The jury's still out on, you know, there's been a lot of talk about tariffs and so on. And we won't know until we know. There will be some, if there are tariffs that eventually get imposed. And I think President Trump is using that as a little bit of a club to kind of get things in line the way he wants them to be.
Right.
But if the tariffs do actually happen, it will increase some costs of goods. But then there will be other inputs into our economy, such as gas prices and so on, which are anticipated to go down. So maybe a net effect would be maybe positive, maybe negative. Who knows?
Well, tariffs on foreign goods increase prices of domestic products because they're – or will it lower prices of domestic products, or will it have no effect?
It depends on the overall inputs of what the cost of those products are. Okay. Like I say, some inputs, like fuel prices and delivery costs and so on, are anticipated to go down. And then the cost of the goods themselves, as far as the imported items that will have a tariff, those tariffs obviously will be passed on to the consumer.
Right.
And so on. But who's to say whether the tariffs, as many of the tariffs as are being talked about, will actually occur? You can see in the news, again, where you watch your news, where many of the world leaders are now negotiating and coming and maybe backing off to avoid the tariffs.
Right.
So time will tell. That's kind of where we're at right now with the economy, is mostly we're waiting to see.
I thought it was funny that we had the run on toilet paper just a few months ago because there was some supply chain, some boats in the harbors that couldn't. And it's like, well, do you know, like 90% of the toilet paper we use is made here in the United States? That really shouldn't have any effect. But
again, it goes back to perception. And perception drives a lot of what actually happens, not what really is. And so again,
instead of reality, people are, whether they believe it's going to be a problem, and they perceive.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember trying to get toilet paper back during COVID and getting stuck at some point where you're buying the cheapest thing on the shelf, the one ply. So nobody wants to be in that situation again. They hear that.
It was a good bartering system that immediately got set up. I know of several people that were trading back and forth.
Oh, I love it.
My daughter went out and bought a bidet, and she swears by him now, but she's like, yeah, I don't ever have to buy toilet paper again. I have a bidet. I'm like, okay.
She beat the system.
She beat, well, maybe, except for the bidet people are probably really happy because their sales probably went through the roof.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I love it.
So, all right. Well, you know, Doug, a lot of people talk about,
Brad.
It's Brad. I'm sorry.
Brad.
Yeah. I know a guy named Doug Stuckey, but anyway. Brad, sorry about that. Everybody talks about the growth and how, you know, our town, our county is just bursting at the seams. The number one economy used to be agriculture. Now it is construction, producer of jobs. Are things changing here in such a way that we're all going to have to change?
Well, it's actually changed over the years.
Okay.
I've lived here pretty much all my life, with a few years here and there exception.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember St. George when it was around 10,000 people.
Wow.
And so I've seen a lot of change over the years, and I've also experienced the different quality of life that has occurred. And I can honestly say that for me, I think we have a better quality of life now, even with all the influx of people, than we had back in the 60s and 70s, just because of the different opportunities for employment, the different health care, recreational, all of the different things that we have and enjoy have made life. It wasn't bad then. It was idyllic at that time, but it's really good now. And I give credit to, as I've looked over the years, a lot of times people complain about city zoning and planning and so on, but I've been involved in some of those general plan formations and so on, and for the most part, I think our city officials in all of our Washington County area have done an excellent job in managing the growth.
It is unique in the way people's wants have changed, right? I mean, you talked about, I mean, back in the, you know, the 60s, all you needed was a bicycle and a dirt road, right? And
I'm a testament to that.
Yeah. Yes. And now things are different. What do we need now? We need trails. We need, you know, parks. We need, you know, steps up the backside of Tech Ridge and restaurants to choose from and things like that. So, with the growth you mentioned, our needs, our wants have changed.
Yeah, and our economy has become more diverse also.
Right.
A long time ago, like you said, agriculture and then tourism, and then construction started to overtake tourism. And now we're getting a much broader-based economy. And when I was getting ready to graduate from college, I didn't immediately come back to St. George because the opportunities for employment were not necessarily there for what I was doing. And I was lucky a few years after that to be able to come back and be involved in the economy. But with the influx of the different manufacturers and wholesalers and different tech companies has made it a whole lot more able for younger people to come back and raise their families. Rather than having to export our prime resource of our young families, they don't have to leave anymore, which is a blessing.
I've heard the saying St. George doesn't have a, doesn't have a growth problem. It doesn't have a pricing problem. It has an employment problem. And we're not paying, we don't have enough jobs and we're not paying enough money. But you're saying that is changing.
That is changing. Yeah. Still, I haven't seen recently any, data on average wages and so on. And you have to bake that in with cost of living and so on. Housing is a big thing that is being addressed and will continue to need to be addressed and a very hot topic. But slowly and gradually, there are more affordable housing and projects being done because of the pressures that are being felt. It's not an immediate fix, and there's not only just one thing that has to be done to fix it. But over time, that will be resolved. But again, this place is so desirable to live, yeah. It drives the prices up because there's more people wanting the homes than people that are available.
As an economist, a banker, Bank of Utah, Brad Stuckey is with us today. I'm curious. I always wondered about this, and I haven't heard anybody ask this question, so I'm going to ask it to you. And maybe you don't know the answer, or maybe you do. When the inflation got really bad, and it did get really bad, in fact, it's still kind of bad, our wages went up some. Not as much as inflation went up, but our wages went up some. And so people are going, okay, Trump's going to come now and prices are going to go down. But they're never going to go down to what they were for a lot of reasons. But in my mind, one of the big ones is we all now make more money than we did. So, you know, they're not going to drop a loaf of bread down to, you know, 49 cents again. You can't, right?
No, you can't. And again, it goes back to the price of the components, the cost of creating the goods and services. And again, that's inflation goes up and when they say inflation is down, it means that the rate of increase in the prices is slowing.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that the prices themselves have dropped.
It's a different word. That would be deflation.
That would be deflation.
Yeah.
And in some instances, we will have some prices drop. I expect, again, fuel prices. We've seen them come down.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll come down even a little bit more, which will, you know, give some affordability back to some of the people, households. But wages will have to increase. I think overall that we're seeing about a 3.5 to 4% increase in wages, which isn't near the 9% inflation rate. And
right.
Everybody's feeling the pinch. I mean, you know, you go buy eggs, you go buy milk, you go buy things that you used to not think about, but now you think about before you buy it. Eventually, hopefully, it will come back into alignment. But I don't think it's going to be a real quick fix.
By the way, eggs, about between 20 and 30 cents an egg now. So you buy a dozen eggs, it's going to cost you $3 or $4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get used to it, I guess. So, all right, thank
or
you,
get
Brad.
Get yourself some chickens.
Yeah, well, I think, isn't it legal to own chickens? You can
absolutely.
Own like three or something if you live in mm-hmm. the city or something like
yeah.
that. So I don't want to do the work. Is
no.
and got there.
And they're tough on your yard, but
yeah,
you'd have yeah. 20 cent eggs. You'd be producing. You'd be revenue positive.
I know a lot of families that are still raising chickens and
really?
Harvesting their own eggs and selling them to their neighbors.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yep, we have one in our neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Brad, thank you for coming in. Bank of Utah, right?
Yes.
What's the best way to get a hold of you? Do you have a website or a phone number?
Yes, you can look up Bank of Utah on the website, mm-hmm. and that's probably the easiest way
okay.
to look us up. We have our retail branch on 335 East St. George Boulevard. Also, the commercial lending operation is in that same location. And we have a mortgage location at 243 East St. George Boulevard, just a block west of the retail branch.
Okay, awesome. Bank of Utah. Thank you. Sean, I know you have a couple events we want to mention before. We only have like 3 minutes left, so but before we let you go.
Just real quick, we have our Christmas party today. So
ooh.
We're inviting all our chamber members over to stop in. It's just an open house. Goes from 11:30 to 1. Come in, grab a Christmas gift. Meet Santa.
Okay, Santa's going to be there. Will there be eggnog?
There will not be eggnog,
no.
but there will be hot chocolate.
Okay. Then that's good.
It's a good substitute,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll have pizza there. Everything
pizza, okay.
Everything we bought for today's party come from our chamber members. And
that
so
is
we
awesome.
Have
yeah.
door prizes from Rocky Mountain Chocolate and Minky Couture and Pico Rica, Hearst Ace Hardware. We went to Barbecue Pit Stop. All of our door prizes are worth about $100.
That's
and so
awesome.
We'll be giving those away through, I don't think you can do raffles, but we'll
no,
have tickets that look an awful lot like raffle tickets. this opportunity prize, we'll call it that.
Opportunities.
Yeah. And then we have our gala coming up. And our gala is where we're recognizing businesses that are making an impact in Washington County. And then the profit from that event go to scholarships for people in tourism.
Nice. And that's in January, the gala?
Yeah, January
18th. Gala? I don't know which one to call it.
You can call it gala, you can call it gala.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. Either way, we're easy going, and it's a black tie affair. It's fantastic. We have a halftime show.
Really?
We've got a Southern Utah favorite, Nick Chamberlain, and his band coming up from L.A. Nick grew up here in Southern Utah, and we had him for our halftime show last year, and it went so well that we invite him back for a second year. So
nice.
They'll play
nice.
Some oldies but goodies that you'll recognize and get people moving. So, and then we go back into our awards.
And for more information on the gala?
stgeorgechamber.com.
stgeorgechamber.com. Awesome. Guys, thanks for coming in. It's been a pleasure talking with you today on the Andy Griffin Show. We're going to take a commercial break and check weather. We'll be back with more after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Good morning, everybody. 9:34 on KDXU. Dave Romer is with me right now. Dave is a modern warrior. He's with Modern Warrior. In fact, he's got the shirt on it. That was a cool shirt, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
The only thing about it, it does look a little bit like the Vegas Golden Knights logo,
it
too.
It is kind of similar, yeah.
But you guys have been around a lot longer than them, so.
That's right.
They
That's
stole
right.
your logo. You didn't steal
Thieves.
Theirs.
Thieves.
Yeah, so. Dave, thanks so much for coming on today.
Yeah, no problem.
Obviously, guns in the news right now. We had the Wisconsin school shooting. Weird one because you think young adolescent male, maybe 17, 18-year-old kid. No, this was a 15-year-old girl
mm-hmm.
that got a hold of a handgun, went to school, killed a teacher, killed a fellow student, and injured several others before killing herself. And so I thought it'd be appropriate today maybe to talk a little bit about how in the heck a 15-year-old girl could get a hold of a gun and what maybe went wrong. And again, we don't know a lot of the details
right,
on all
right,
that.
Right.
So we're
it's going to take some time to get some of that out.
Yeah,
but.
Exactly. But I thought it'd be good to maybe talk about that kind of thing. Where to store your guns, how old a kid, maybe you know, is going to know where the gun is. And I mean, you have young kids at home. So what,
I do,
what is your safety practice for keeping your firearms at your house?
So, if they're not on my body, they're locked up. Okay. So there's a vault that most of them are in. I have a,
but you have little kids, right?
Yeah.
Like you can put it in a tall drawer and not locked, and they'd never get it.
I technically could, yeah. But even like my carry gun, when it comes off me at home, I've actually got like a safe on my bedside. Everybody can know what it is. If somebody came in, they could take it and run off with it, but it's guns never in there unless I'm at home, right? Yeah, but
I have the same thing, actually.
It's also a fingerprint where she doesn't have a fingerprint, so even if she knows where it is, she can't get to
it,
right?
Getting it open,
right? So I use that for my carry gun because it's, I don't want to be going in and out of the vault every day, just for that stuff. So having something a little more accessible is nice, but it is locked up where even if I'm in the kitchen, I'm not paying attention. No prying eyes or prying hands are getting to it.
Let's talk about teenagers though. So you don't have teenagers yet. Mine are all, my baby just turned 21. So mine are gone. Gotcha. But there was certainly a time in my life, and there will be a time in your life, where we're going to have teenagers in the house.
Right.
It's funny. Parents get under the, we keep a few secrets from our teenagers. We don't want them to know, you know, kids always know. I mean, my parents, you know, I remember them one time. Well, you don't know about this, but we did this, and I'm like, oh, I knew. I've known about years. Yeah. My theory is they're going to know where you keep your guns. They're probably going to know your code, you know.
Potentially.
Because most of us are creatures of habit, and we're going to use the same code for a lot of the same thing. I mean, I think my code for my gun safe is pretty similar to my garage code, you know what I mean? So what do we need to do? Should there be an added layer of protection, or is putting them in a safe good enough?
I mean, it's going to be very situationally dependent. Different people are different ways. Obviously, if you live someone and you're around them all the time, even if you work with someone, like, you can tell if their mindset's a little different than other people, what things work better for them and what don't. Mm-hmm. Personally, I use a different code for safe stuff than I do for anything else, just because of the sensitive nature of it. Pins and stuff can get leaked and go out and all that. So, when you're using the same stuff all the time, is someone going to go on the deep web and find your pin and then go to your house? Probably not. But at least for me, it gives me a little extra peace of mind. The flip side, too, is all my safes and stuff, they have a longer code than a 4-digit pin.
So mine is only
it actually code. Makes it even easier. So I guess I can't use the same one. I do a separate one completely for all that stuff that I don't use for other things, which does help insulate that a little bit. Could they figure it out? Could they see me type it? Maybe. I mean, they're not old enough for that yet. But personally, I think that's a good thing to keep away from the kids, your actual combos and stuff. It's up to the individual on how much access you give when you're around, but until they have their own, I don't really think it should be a kind of just a free flow and go grab whatever you want whenever you want kind of deal, unless they own it. But that's a personal, you know, thought on that. But I know everyone's different. I grew up in Alabama. Everybody had their own hunting shotguns and rifles and all that. Sure. But even my buddies in high school, like, they didn't have access to that. They had to ask for their dad or whatever to go unlock it and give it to them. Even the guys that had farms and stuff. So,
I wrote a story on our website a couple of months ago about the fact that Utah has changed. I remember when I moved to Utah, I was a teenager, moved to Utah from Texas, and Texas, like Alabama, everybody had a gun. I mean, there were guns, and that's just the way it was. So I moved to Utah thinking, well, Utah's not going to be like that. I was wrong. This was in the 80s. But I remember I was sitting on the bus with some kids. I was a new guy, right? And they were talking about deer hunting. And I was like, oh, you know, in Texas, and I started maybe bragging a little bit about Texas. They opened up an encyclopedia in their heads and started talking about hunting, because every one of these kids in middle school, they've been hunting for their whole lives.
They knew
everything about guns. They knew about deer. They knew it. They could clean a deer. You know, I mean, we're talking about 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, and they knew all about that. So back then in the 80s, everybody already knew. No, I'm not going to say everybody. Most everybody already. I think the numbers were 80-something% that there was a gun in the household. Utah has changed, though. I mean, that was that was 45 years ago.
Yeah.
I was able to find a couple of studies in writing the story that said the number of households in Utah that have a firearm is down at like 40 or 41% from 80.
A lot of transplants.
Yeah. And I don't know, is it transplants? Is it people that just grew out of that and don't want to do that anymore? Is that what do you think that is?
I mean, obviously, I've got kind of a skewed data set that I look at on a consistent basis. But I don't typically see people where, especially like hunting, it's such an ingrained, more lifestyle thing, more so than concealed carry and protection. But like hunting is just like, it's just a way of life. And when they almost always raise their kids that way. It just keeps going. That's not really some you see just drift off and disappear, really. So I have a feeling it's a lot more in the transplant front, knowing that there's a ton of people that have been moving here over the last few years. That's going to be a big fact, especially from places where not so friendly to the gun stuff and not moving in with stuff either most of the time. But there's an element to that. I mean, the flip side, too, is, I mean, you hear it all the time, you know, the typical older guy mantra. You know, I used to go to school with, a gun rack in my truck. You never had problems. Part of that, too, is I think everyone was very comfortable and very familiar. They knew their gun safety. They knew how to manipulate. Right. There wasn't this weird mystique or going on about it. If you got a chance to see one, it's like, oh, I better go mess with this. This is my only chance. You know, there's none of that. You know, everybody's used to it. It's not a big deal.
And the other thing, too, is we never, back then, we couldn't even fathom pointing that gun and taking another human life. It didn't enter into our brain. We weren't militarily trained. We were trained, you go hunting with guns. That's what you do. You shoot animals.
And those safety rules were ingrained very well, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like even your toy guns. I know when I was a little kid, we didn't really have guns in our house. But even then, like, if I pointed a toy gun at somebody, a toy one, all plastic, nowhere close to a real one, I pointed that at somebody, that thing was gone. Mm-hmm. I never saw it again. the trash is out of here.
Do you have cap guns when you were a kid? Oh, yeah, those, because they made a loud noise.
That's right. Yeah. So much fun.
Let's go back to this Wisconsin thing. 15-year-old girl gets a hold of a handgun. Presumably, it's not her own. So there are two ways we can explore this. Number one, we assume she probably got it from her home somewhere.
More than likely.
She also could have gotten it in a different way, but let's go with the home one first.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously there were guns in the home if that's where she got it.
Right.
So do you feel like, and I'm just asking you to speculate, obviously, do you feel like there was a failure that they didn't secure the gun? Do you feel like she stole it from a parent, maybe who left it on the table when they were getting dressed and forgot about it? Or
I think, from talking to people, I think there is a level of complacency that has kind of creeped in to a lot of gun owners, and that has become very common, especially people that are carrying all the time. There's kind of this prevailing thought, well, it's on me, so it's okay. Huh. Well, it is, except when it's not on you.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. But it seems like very, very often that comes off when they get home, gets set on a counter, and they walk away.
Yeah.
And no one thinks about it again until it's time to put it back on.
Yeah.
And I do think that's a failure point and a common one, unfortunately, a common one. Is that what happened? No idea. But I would not be surprised at all if it came out that is what happened. Just from talking to people, it seems like that's a very normal kind of mindset and approach, that I'm in my house, so it doesn't need to be locked up. And in some ways that can be true, but in others, I mean, if it's just me and my wife, I feel pretty comfortable leaving that around. She's not going to do something. But especially kids, all right. I mean, brains are developing, doing all sorts of stuff. Things can happen, especially people are going through all sorts of weird hormonal stuff.
I was going to say,
So adolescent kids, especially, like, talk about a wild card.
That's true. We've all been there.
Personally, I'd be more worried about an adolescent teen than a 5-year-old. Honestly, you know, it's a little more stable on the hormones and everything else at that age. But I think it's often just misunderstood and overlooked. I think, what's the harm in throwing in a readily accessible safe?
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be some crazy expensive high speed. Even if it's like a security cabinet, you can go buy those for $50.
Yeah.
just has a key.
I think it's
achieving the purpose of prying hands can't get to it. That's really the goal on that, right? That's not your long term. Someone breaks into my house, they can't get to it. That's prying hands.
Yeah, good right. point. Let me get a commercial break in. When I come back, I want to ask, what are the possibilities, or what are the odds anyway, that she acquired the gun in some other fashion? We'll talk about that when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
We're talking a little bit today on the Andy Griffin Show about that Wisconsin school shooting that happened the other day. Two people dead, and it could have been a lot worse. I think there were six injured, and actually three people dead if you count the shooter. But
right.
It turns out it was a 15-year-old girl, and we were talking about maybe she got it, probably she got it from somewhere in her home. But, Dave, what are the odds she got it somewhere else, and where would she have obtained it if not at home?
I mean, there's obviously other routes, especially if you're not worried about the legal aspects of things, to get things. For younger kids, it's a lot less likely they're going and you know, buying, you know,
right.
for lack of a better term, a black market gun or something in an alley. Right. Like, that's not, yes, is that doable? Sure, you can do that, but younger kids typically aren't doing that. More than likely, if it wasn't from her house, it probably was a friend's.
Oh, more than likely. I didn't even think about that.
More
yeah.
than likely, just statistically speaking.
So she
very well may have been in a friend's house.
Yeah, she saw her friend's
their parents didn't lock up their guns or something and saw it and either stole it or convinced them to get it for them or
That's
whatever.
That's a good point.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, having it's not just your house that you often will have access to as a kid, right? You're going over friend's house and stuff all the time. Yeah, yeah I mean... If I was having to put my money down and it wasn't from her house, I would bet it's a friend's house.
Yeah. Well,
technically, it could have been, you know, a shady individual. It could have been, it could have been like a private sale, which wouldn't have been legal because she's not old enough. But
right,
but something like that.
And that's what I was going to ask. You know, she could not have obtained it legally from a pawn shop
legally. No. Okay. A handgun, you got to be federal law. Handguns, you got to be 21 to buy. Okay. That includes private sales. So here in Utah, you don't have to go through a background check. If like I wanted to sell you a gun individually, we could do that, and I don't have to go through a shop or do a background. However, there's still laws we have to abide by, right?
Right.
You have to be a Utah resident. You've got to be 21. Right. Personal policy, I would require you to have a concealed carry permit. That way I know you can pass a background check. But there's some other caveats to that. You can't just go willy-nilly, whatever you want to do. But
it did remind me, though, of there, you know, big to-do made of this CEO of a healthcare company getting shot by a guy, and they I don't know if you saw the video. That was pretty sobering.
I
shot him from behind, and but apparently that was a what they call a ghost gun. It was a gun with no serial number. Tell us how those come to be.
Well, there's a few ways you can go about that. You can buy non-complete firearms, and so often referred to as 80%. And so they don't have a serial number because they're not actually a firearm yet. And it's the general shape, but you actually have to go and actually cut out the insides and get them to spec and everything so that you can drop parts in. So it's the reason it doesn't have a serial number is because it's not a gun yet. It's not completely built out. If that frame or lower was completely cut out, that is then classified as a firearm, and so it has to have a serial number. So you've got to do the manufacturing yourself in order to do that. It is legal to manufacture your own guns. That's okay. Not for resale, but you can manufacture your own guns legally. But you actually have to manufacture it. You have to do the cutting and all that kind of stuff. That's the most popular way.
Now, what would be the purpose behind that? Just so people could have them without serial numbers?
I mean, a lot of people like them in the sense that they don't have to worry about getting tracked. There's a lot of distrust of the government on that front.
I don't know why, but
a lot of people like to at least have a few of those just so that there's some that aren't on the books anywhere.
So if the government
now,
to take them
the
away,
flip side of that is ATF has raided quite a few of those companies that make those and raided them for their customer records. So they're trying to find people that way through that, just as an FYI. The other reason, too, though, is just that it's for a lot of people, it's a hobby. It's fun. The cool part on, like, an AR, for instance, cool part is you really don't need to be a gunsmith to put one together. You can buy the parts. They're very standardized, and we jokingly refer to it as, like, adult Legos trying to build those things. Mm. Everything just goes together. It's pretty simple, actually. For people a little more technically oriented, to them, it's a lot more fun to actually get a mill or a jig or something and actually machine out that lower. And so a lot of people do it just for the kicks and giggles of it, honestly. There's a prevalence of 3D printers these days, though.
Yeah.
And those files are out there. There's not really any way you could pull that back at this point. And if you don't, I mean, if it's something that you're trying to...
The horse is out of the barn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, good luck bringing that one back in. Yeah. Is it something I would trust if I needed to manufacture a firearm to go overseas and fight with? No, I would never do a 3D printing gun for that. Yeah. I would never do that. The flip side, though, is like if you're trying to do the CEO deal, if it's one guy, maybe a couple rounds, durability is not that big a concern, is it? No. So you could pretty easily just print one. Doesn't have to survive very long. Rip a few rounds off. Job's done. And again, I can't conceive a way that you bring that back now that that's out. And 3D printers have become a lot more affordable. I know tons of people that have them that they're really not that much.
So I could,
there are better quality ones that cost a lot more. But again, if you're not worried about durability, it doesn't need to last a long time.
So I could right now buy a 3D printer, and they're actually not that expensive. They used to be really pricey, but they're not anymore.
They used
to
be prohibitively expensive.
And I could buy a pattern and actually print out a gun and put it together myself.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. Not in a good way, I don't think.
No. In a lot of ways, it's not great. But... Yeah, I mean, it's, again, how do you walk that back?
You can't.
It's information, right?
Make a law. How do you disappear information from
the ether? You can't, right? It's out there. And so that's and it's part of the struggle with gun control people as well, which often we don't like. But the flip side of that is even if best intentions at hand, even if everyone can get on an agreement that, okay, we shouldn't have this, how do you do that? Yeah. I mean, honestly, how do you do that? I can't even dream up a way that you could. Honestly, it's out there. It's too late.
Good point. So, do we know on this Luigi guy what he did? Was that a 3D printed gun, or do we not know?
I've heard a lot of rumors about various things. It could have been a 3D. It could have been an 80% where he did the frame. It could be just ill-maintained. Same thing with the suppressor aspect of that. You can 3D print those. You can manufacture your own. I mean, if you want to get real crude with it, you can go down and buy some PVC and some raw materials, and you could do one that's going to last a couple shots as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't take anything that crazy or technical to get the job done for something like that. And you kind of get on that slippery slope like you're seeing in England. They're starting to try to ban all sorts of knives and stuff now, of even like kitchen size, because, crime. But the flip side of that is, the ATF, what was that, a year and a half ago, they put out a new frame and receiver rule to try to ban these 80% of these ghost guns and all that. What they had to come up with was, okay, is it something that you could anybody with a decent amount of tools and skill could readily make a gun out of? Okay, well, based on kind of the criteria that was in that, so if I buy a blank piece of metal, that would technically be a gun. Because I could make that into a gun.
Yeah.
If I go buy some PVC pipe, that's a suppressor.
That sounds so
what, we're gonna regulate every piece of PVC, every piece of metal that's in existence?
Can.
You go down to, like, Home Depot.
Yeah.
You want to build a house? Well, here, you can go fill out a bunch of 4473s to make sure you're not buying guns. Like,
background check.
How do you do that? I mean, it's not really practical or realistic, unfortunately. But there's a level. I mean, there's a level with all this. I mean... I think most of us over here are fans of freedom and personal liberty and everything else. But, and I think we've talked about this before, that's great. And it gives you the opportunity to do a lot of things and do some great things. But the flip side is that it is freedom and liberty. People can choose to do bad things. There is a level of risk with that, and you're never going to get rid of all of it.
One of the sad things about that video of that guy shooting the CEO, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that even if that CEO guy was carrying, I don't think he could have done anything better. He shot him in the back.
Yeah. No, it was,
the ultimate.
Everyone has the John Wick fallacy, I like to call it. If you ever need your gun, you're going to be, it's you against, 800 dudes, and you're going to come out on top. And the reality of civilian owner, defense is you're probably going to get ambushed, which is exactly what that was.
Yeah. From behind.
Probably going to get ambushed. Yeah. And it's the same thing I tell like spouses. We see it all the time. You have guys come in, they want their carry gun. You start talking to the spouse. Hey, you know, you interested in anything? Oh no, he's got one. I'm good. I'm like, well, just saying, the criminals usually go after guys first. And again, yeah. This is typically an ambush. So if they come in and pop him first, now what do you got? Nothing.
Nothing.
Right.
You got nothing. So, you got a dead husband on the ground.
That's
with a gun.
Right. That's right.
I ain't gonna help you. So,
yep.
Dave, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. The final word of advice, lock up your guns, all the time. Lock up your guns when you're home.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not using it, there's no harm in having it in a security cabinet or just a little lockbox. Yep. It doesn't hurt anything. It's easy. It's fast. It's not expensive.
The life you save just makes sense. Is worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it, man. Good to talk to you today. We'll be back tomorrow. Mayor Billings with me. Talk to you then.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.